All this sucks.
Yeah, we just sorted it out. So actually we split ourselves up because we'll go hunting together anyway.
Yeah.
And so if we split ourselves up and then we put his girlfriend with me in my group and then put my wife in his group.
Right.
And then we just have two extra people as well. It doesn't matter which group they're in. And then either way, no matter what, we're covered.
Yeah.
Because if I need to go out with my wife, well, I'll take my wife out. Or if I'm going out with him and he's in the other group and has the tag, well, that's great. Then we got that covered too.
Yeah.
Otherwise it just wouldn't work. And yeah, we just have to drop it down to one group.
But yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think what we're going to do this year is because we've got a couple other buddies who started getting more and more into hunting. So we got myself, you know, my cousin, a couple buddies, now my kid and my dad. So we got like seven guys. So we'll just do two groups again, but we'll just put like, yeah, we'll probably put my dad with my kid Wyatt and then maybe my cousin together, and then the four of us can just go in together. I think that's the way we'll do it.
Yeah. And yeah, it's funny. You gotta figure out those ands, ifs, or buts if you're busy at work too during that season. And okay, if I can't go, who can take such and such in the group? And
yeah, well, that's why I kept like my dad is obviously going to want to hunt with Wyatt, right? So that'll be a big one. But I mean, I can still go with them, but at least that way, you know, if I'm out hunting, I can help my dad, right? I can go with my dad and my son. I can help them, right? My dad can shoot it. I can help them with all the processing, right? You know, getting it back and all that stuff. And then I can just go out with a buddy or two and go do our own thing. That way too, like, as long as there's four of us together, that way, yeah, if one of us doesn't make it, there's still three. And if, even if worst case scenario, two don't make it, then there's still two of us to go, right?
Yeah, no, that's the way to go. Yeah.
I don't want to take like, Wyatt's only 10, so he's not there yet. Like in the area, I know where there's moose. You know, it's pretty gnarly to get in there. And like my dad can't make it. So, and I don't want to drag my 10-year-old in there yet.
Yeah. You don't want to wreck that experience for him. Definitely.
No. And then we get a moose down and then, that'd be
that long-term game is what it's all about.
Yeah. No doubt. So, it'll be interesting anyway, just to see what kind of LEHs we're going to get this year. I don't know, man. Like, there's just so much going on. Like, I don't know.
There's not much for moose down here anymore. I mean, we still have them, but you don't see them like you used to.
Yeah. It's the same here. Like we always put in for like 8-14, 8-12, 8-15, 8-10, you know, depending. We try to like, now that we got a couple more folks into it, we'll probably try to break it up. But I mean, the moose numbers aren't high. So it's like, yeah, I mean, it's a shot in the dark. Like, I don't know, like my cousin, he's had that draw. We've been putting in for 8-14, the same amount. And like, he's had the draw twice and I've never gotten it.
How long have you been putting in for?
We've been putting in since, I think 2013 or 2014 was our first year started putting in for that draw. He's gotten it twice.
Yeah, I don't quite get our system at all. You know, some people want to go to the Alberta system and that, and you know, there's pros and cons to everything. Cause you hear some of those guys, like if we went to the Alberta system right now, I mean, you're running a lot on luck, and then some of the older hunters, they may never get the draw then ever, because they won't have the amount of years to build up the points. Like somebody who's in their 20s or 30s.
Yeah. So, like down in the States, you could transfer points. Hey, like, so say you've been putting in for points, like say my dad, for instance, he started putting in points and like, say he croaks, right? Kicks the bucket. He could transfer those points to like my son or me.
Really?
Yeah. There's some states that you can transfer points. I'm not sure the exact states, but I know there are states that you can do that.
Man, that's thinking. That's
it's kind of like then at least, you know, like my dad, he's 70. How old is that guy? He's 71 this year, right? So he's going to put in for draws just because he wants, like, if we get a draw, we'll go set up a camp and stuff like that. That's what it's all about for him. And now that his grandson's hunting, he was more happy than I was, and I was pretty pumped, right? Like,
and that's what it's all about. Like, I mean, I love harvesting my own things, but neither of my kids, none of my kids actually want to go out, period. It is what it is, whatever keeps them happy, right?
Yeah.
My youngest daughter was with me for my first whitetail, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess we'll see how she reacts to this. And she walked up to it, and after I made sure it was dead, she was It's just like, can I poke it in the eye? Sure. You can touch its eye. I was like, well, maybe there's some hope here, but no, she went another route and that's all good. But even now it's like, I look at my couple of my hunting partners. If one of their, the one person I don't hunt with all the time, but if I get a phone call and it's like, come help me pack it out, it's just, it's not a question of if, we just help each other. That's all there is to it. Don't expect me, nothing. Just, where are you? I'll be up there in a few minutes.
Yeah,
and he texted me a picture of his boy, first year hunting, just the other year, not this last year, but the year before, dropped this beautiful whitetail, like beautiful. Man, he texted me that. I think I was at their house waiting for them. Got them. I was so pumped. I just wanted to give the kid the biggest high five ever.
Yeah, man, that's cool. Yeah, it's pretty, it's pretty fun when you get to see that. I've got a couple other buddies who've already gone through that, man. But yeah, it's kind of funny. I'm definitely more excited for him than I've been for myself in a long while. So, yeah, so we're going to try for turkey. He wants to go for turkey. I asked him if he wants to try for spring bear. And it's funny because like right away, like before he got it, I was like, so what do you want to get this year? And he's like, well, for this year, Dad, I think I'm just going to go for maybe a couple deer and an elk and a bear.
That's awesome.
Right? Like just, yeah, you know, nothing, no biggie.
Yeah, we'll just knock those down and get on with it.
Yeah, just get those down. No big deal.
Do you guys have a fair amount of turkeys up there?
Yeah, we got a pretty good population. I mean, like probably the same or comparable to like Castlegar area, like in Kelowna. Well, I don't know, man. Like, it's funny because like we've been working on job sites and I've gone there early and then like you just sitting there and all of a sudden you hear a gobble and you're like, what the heck? Right. Yeah. So, but I don't know. I don't really ever hunt around the Kelowna area too much. So, but in the area like 814 where we do hunt, there's lots of turkeys.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, we were doing pretty good up here too. I kind of hunt north of where I live here a bit for turkeys anyway, for the most part, the past couple of years, and it was almost guaranteed to have a shot at one. You might not get it into, you know, into range to shoot it, but you were going to be in the action. Unfortunately up here, there's where the turkeys are, there's a lot of private property and it's not that you can't get access. It's just all choppy. So you might have, I've got one ridge in particular. I've got every property covered there, but it's like, if they just go just a little bit farther one way or the other. And it's just like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Every year you're right here and now you're not. And we've been getting a lot of highway mortality just with the Trans-Canada reroute.
Oh yeah.
And the turkeys have just taken a crap kicking on the highway. It's and everything else too.
Yeah, right.
But that's even today I went just check some cameras up north there and I brought my turkey call with me and just started doing some gobbling on the way in. You know, it's not the season, but I figured new area for me, I might as well do some. I know there's turkeys around somewhere up there. Never got a response, but it is what it is. It wasn't first thing in the morning either. I was closer to like 11 o'clock by the time I got my morning stuff done.
Yeah. Yeah. They're probably like, I don't know. Like I know, Adam, Pangburn there, he texted me the other day and he's like, turkeys are gobbling. So, I don't know. I haven't been up to where we hunt turkeys yet this year, but I know the snow's melting quick. So it's kind of one of those things that like, we still got close to a month left till it opens, but
in town here, like I've got them right below, like we've got our, not only do we have town deer, we've got our town turkeys too. So nice. I kind of watched them and how they're reacting. Yeah, they're right. A big flock that's like half a block away from us. Luckily they don't come into our yard very much, but they're already scrapping. Like they're full on just attitude. And I'm just like, guys, you're going to totally miss the rut if you guys are going at it already.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing you can do about it. And it's funny. Cause like I've had turkeys gobbling at like, you know, right at the opening when it opens and then you just don't get lucky. And then you just keep plugging away. And then all of a sudden, you know, like first week of May, they start chirping up again. So, maybe there's a second rut going on, which I think there is, like anything else. Right. So
yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, most of the critters in the bush, they usually have two cycles. If the hens aren't getting knocked up, then
what do you think of the taste of them?
Oh, I love them.
Do you? I know lots of people don't.
Really?
Yeah. I know a lot of people tell me that, ask them before I got my first one, the other year there, just like, how the heck do you cook them? Like, I've never had one. And they're just like, well, you put the turkey in a pot, boiling water, and throw a rock in there with it. And when it's done, after about 20 minutes or so, you pour out the water and you throw out the turkey and eat the rock. And that's the most tender part about all of them. And I was like, oh. But
that's totally not what I thought you were going to say.
Oh, man. But that recipe book I was telling you about the other week, I'm going to hook you up with. There's a wicked recipe in there, and it's, I forget the name of it, when you flatten the breast out, like with a hammer, like a meat hammer.
Yeah, just to like tenderize it there,
Yeah, so you flatten it all out, and then you put a little bit of ham in there, just because the ham's got a little more moisture to it. Not much, just a little bit.
Right.
And put whatever kind of fancy cheese you want in it, and you roll it up like a cordon bleu, and then you bread it. Make it. Oh, man, it was to die for. And I couldn't understand what everybody else was talking about, but...
Yeah, you see, I'll take the breasts out, and then we usually, at that time of the year, it's like everyone, you know, it's barbecue season, right? You're looking forward to getting barbecue. So we'll barbecue the breasts, and I just put like, it usually take like a little bit of that Frank's Red Hot and mix it with some just regular barbecue sauce, and I'll mix it together and spread that in there, and it's just awesome. And then I'll take like the rest of it.
Yeah.
And then I'll just put it in a slow cooker, and like, and it just falls off the bones. Yeah. And then I'll just like shred it. And then my wife will make like a stew or something with it, or does something with it. But I say like I do it. She really does all the other stuff.
Oh, I hear you there. Yeah. That sounds really good. I'll have to think about that if I get lucky enough.
Yeah. Do you pluck the birds when you get them?
Me? No, I've only shot one, and I shot that 2 years ago. And then last year I tried with my bow. But it was the first year where I went out there, and I was kind of shell-shocked. It was totally missed the rut. And few of the private properties that I have permission on, they're just like, they don't know what happened to them. They just disappeared, like full on, like totally. And they've got beautiful fields below them, nice forest behind them. Like, it's a perfect spot.
Yeah.
And I didn't see them until a couple of weeks after the season closed. And I mean, they were just chilling out doing their thing, but it was just like, they totally vanished, which has never happened. So yeah, I didn't get one last year with my bow, but the year before I just skinned out the breast, and then the skin's pretty easy to peel back.
Yeah.
And then I took the leg meat and all that stuff too, but same thing. Yeah. I didn't even bother plucking it, and it wasn't bad at all.
Yeah. I don't pluck it either. I just cut it up the breast, and I just skin everything off, and then I will just take it and I'll hang it up, and then I'll skin all that yellow, all that crap off it.
But yeah,
I know some guys, like some of my buddies, they pluck the whole thing. And I don't know. He did it 1 year, like Causey did it 1 year, and like he had that thing, he was doing it for hours, and I was like, dude, what are you doing?
Is there a benefit to it?
I don't know, but you know, that crazy fucker, he skins like pheasants and grouse and everything. Plucks pheasants and grouse and everything.
Really?
Yeah, like he'll sit there and pluck a whole freaking grouse, and it looks like same with pheasants. He does it with pheasants. I'm ripping through his text messages here. I'm trying to I want to send you a picture of one of those tiny little like pheasants.
All right.
All plucked.
Yeah, about the only request I got when I sent my wife a picture of my first turkey there was she talked to my father-in-law, let him know that I got one, and he had a request for a bunch of feathers and stuff because he's fly fisherman and everything. So basically dragged it up there and it's just like, which ones you want, you can have them all.
Yeah.
Except for the tail. I being my first one, I actually dried out the tail.
Oh yeah.
Sanded it out. And yeah. I was going to put it in a frame and that, and I took the beard too. And
cool.
Then I got myself a decoy that actually accepts a real fan tail.
Yeah.
So now instead of it being on my wall, it comes out with me all the time. And
oh yeah.
And pop it into the turkey, turkey decoy there, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah, I don't. I have a couple of feathers that I ripped out for the kids. They don't last very long, and I never really did anything else with it after that. I got one of those like the mounts, you know, with the shotgun shells in it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You can just put the fan in the back. I have one of those sitting in my little hunting room there, and I don't know. I just never. Never did it.
Do you use a mouth reed or a sleet, or what kind of calls do you use?
Oh, dude, like, man, most of the time I find I like the sleet call.
Okay, yeah. I do too.
You know, I've got one. I'm really happy with it. Like, I like the mouth call, like the reed, just because you can go, like, you can gobble with it. Like, so I find that's really effective rather than doing another hen call. Like, I'll just throw or do a hen call, I'll throw it a gobble.
Yeah.
Because they'll gobble back right away, but then they're not necessarily running towards the gobble, right? You throw a hen, like, I've been busted so many times when I throw a hen call, and then I'm like walking towards where the gobble's coming from, and then like we butt heads and then it's over.
Oh, gotcha.
You know what I mean? So
yeah,
but I also don't like the reed, like the mouth call.
Okay, what about it?
What's that?
What about it that don't you like? Because I know you use mouth reeds for elk calling it.
Yeah, yeah. So what I don't like about the mouth call is that I get carried away and I overcall. Like, I just I kind of just sit there and I'm like, I'll just sit there and like get bored or something. I don't know what the hell it is, but I'll just sit there and I find myself overcalling. Whereas like the slate call, it's just like so easy. You could just like do a couple nice little, you know, plucks, and then you could put it, then I usually put it down and I'll put it like on the side, and then I'll be like, okay, let's not get carried away here. Cause I think overcalling is like, you know, it's one of the biggest things that people do that you're not supposed to do. At least I find anyway, cause like I've sat there and overcalled lots, and then, you know, you get a couple gobbles and you keep calling back, and then you don't get another one, so you keep calling, and then that's like your day, right? You never hear nothing for the rest of the day. And then, you know, the times that it's worked, you just throw it one little call, and then they're like come running, and you just don't get carried away. And even if you let it sit for like 10-15 minutes 20 minutes even, then all of a sudden they start getting more aggressive. So then throw another little one. Yeah, and then, you know, that's usually what's worked for me. So
but. My biggest problem is I end up trying to call elk. I get into it. I sit there and all of a sudden I'm cow calling instead of making my little bucks. I'm just stopping, being like, oh, that's the wrong animal. And I've found a lot of the turkey calls are those flat ones for the mouth reed. Yeah. I can't run those. I can get them going, but I can't get them going consistently. And it's the same with the elk calls. I use a soft dome. River.
Yeah.
And they've actually got a turkey call. I'm going to order one this year to try it, because I do like mouth calls. And I figure that's probably the last, if that one doesn't work for me, I'm probably going to give up. I do have the slate. I do love the slate. And I agree with you on the same thing. But yeah, there's times where I think I just kind of like elk calling. It kind of like to have both hands free, especially in archery, just to gotta make that one little sound, just to pull them in that extra, you know, around that bush or that little tree or something like that.
Yeah.
But all that movement from your hands, like, I mean, their eyesight is so good.
Oh, it's dude, ridiculous. Killer.
Yeah. Yeah. I always thought the hunters and the pitchers and stuff, when they're all done up and blending in, like, they look like a bloody tree and everything. And I'm like, you guys are ridiculous. Then she's getting out there with them, and it is crazy how good their eyesight is.
Oh yeah, man. I've been busted by birds, and it's like, how in the fuck did that thing see me? Like, I hidden right in there, and like face mask on and everything, right? Like hidden right in there, and like they just come around the corner. I didn't move, like just sitting there, and like the only thing that moving is my eyeball, and it's just like gone. Yeah, it's either like their intuition, or I think, you know, he's looked right at me, and he could tell, right, looking right in my eyeballs. But
I've often wondered about those blinds. Have you seen those blinds? I believe they're called a ghost blind. Could be mistaken on that. It's almost like a mirror. It's supposed to be good. You got to pack it around, and it's a reflection, and it looks, I mean, they look awesome. I don't think they were that expensive either. I wouldn't want to pack it around. I think it would be more like a, if you kind of knew where they were and you didn't have to pack it very far, it would be good. Yeah.
Googled it. Those are pretty neat.
Yeah. So I often wondered, with a bird like that, that can see so well, and how aggressive, I mean, if you've been on a turkey hunt mid rut, it's crazy how hard they come in. Like, they come in for a fight. So I always wondered, well, if they're seeing their own reflection, is it going to make them even matter? Like, cause you don't even have to, you still got to worry about yourself, obviously, for movement, but I'm in the same boat. I don't know how many times I've been busted and be like, I'm pretty sure I didn't move. But obviously I did.
Yeah, it's tricky too. You know, back to those calls, the box call you know, I think the box call makes the most turkey like sounds.
Yeah.
But I just hate carrying that thing around. Because I always find it's like you move over and like I have a little pouch when I'm turkey hunting. It's got calls and shit in there. I always find like it's just like, you know what I mean? It's squeaking. Like I got a elastic band around to hold it down tight, but it still rubs together and it still squeaks and it's just bulky.
So is that the one that's like a rectangle and then the handle moves across it? Or is that like, I've got another box call that's got two
dowels. Yeah, no. Yeah, no, not though. I've never tried those things, but I've seen them on, a movie once.
Yeah.
Mark Wahlberg, he was using that.
I have called them in with that before.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But I have a hard time being consistent with it. When it works good.
Yeah.
But how often it works, I don't really know. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. See, so have you ever heard those? Yeah, for sure. Have you ever heard those things calling, like the actual turkeys calling back, like a hen going nuts?
Oh, yeah. That's why I love having our town turkeys.
Oh, yeah. Right in town.
There. I get to listen to them communicate so much. And
yeah,
I try to get out there, especially when they do go. They've got a route around my place. They don't usually stop at my place, except for in the wintertime with the berries and the trees.
Yeah.
But I do, when they're out front and they're not like moving through fast, I'll go and sit on my porch to listen to them.
Oh, yeah. Smart.
It's what better benefit? I don't have to locate them or anything. And especially if they're all worked up and stuff, just try to pay attention and figure out what they're doing or what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's helped a bit, but now I need to find some turkeys that aren't run over on the highway. So at that point, I need to find another spot and see what I can come up with. And hopefully, you know, I'd love to have somebody who actually knows what they're doing. Like that's their jam.
Oh yeah.
You know, kind of like elk hunting, same thing. Be like, don't do this, do this. This is why you do it. This is why you don't. And watch them do their thing. That's how I love to learn.
Yeah, that would be nice. But, you know, the turkey hunting was like when, you know, we got into turkey hunting. And like, I just started turkey hunting. Everyone's like, why the fuck are you turkey hunting? Like, it was tough at the beginning. It was really tough. Obviously, it's gotten easier like anything. But, I mean, I'm definitely no expert. But, yeah, for sure. How about the decoys?
Yeah, I got a hen that I can either stand up or lay down.
Yeah.
And I had a little Jake that I have as well. And then last year I got a cool Tom one, and that's the one I can put that fan into, the tail fan.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I've actually got a little remote control for it. It weighs nothing. So to pack it in a bag is nothing.
Yeah.
And I can actually make it swivel back and forth. Like it's posturing for the hen.
Yeah.
So pretty cool to have. But again, if we were just going to go out to BF nowhere and try to find them, I probably wouldn't bring that one. I'd probably bring the other two. They're just kind of soft ones. Right. And I just slap them in my bag until I found like, okay, this is where we're going tomorrow morning. We saw them roost or we know where they are. Then I would bring it out just because it is a little bigger. It's solid. So a bit more of a pain to pack, but so cool to use. Like,
yeah, that would be.
And yeah, I had, when I got mine 2 years ago, I had mine set up. I was actually below the little ridge line that they come across. And the only reason I got a shot at it, it actually saw me move my gun toward it. It started booking it. And all of a sudden it saw the Tom I had set up another 15 yards away and it froze for a second.
Oh yeah.
That's when I got him. It was right at that second.
Nice.
Hanging around. But so they definitely have a place. They do their thing, but I probably didn't even have it set up right. Like, just like anything else, you don't have them set up right. It doesn't look natural and they're wondering what the heck's going on.
Yeah. I've never had any luck with them, like any luck at all. Like the only time I've ever actually seen those birds go after a decoy was when maybe it was 2 years ago, but Kazi had some we were struggling. Like it's kind of, the whole story is pretty funny. So we go, I think it was the very first year when COVID hit. So it wasn't last year, it was the year before. Yeah. It wasn't 3 years ago. So we're like, okay, well let's go. It's turkey time. So let's go. So we go to our spot not where we normally go, but we go in there, we set up the wall tent, right? He shows up and he starts drinking right away. So I'm like, dude, calm down the beers. Like, it opens tomorrow. We got to go up the hill. We got to throw some calls out tonight. He's like, don't worry about me. I'm good. So I get camp all set up. Well, we both did. He's cutting some firewood and shit. I get the wall tent set up, get the fire going. And like, okay, like, it's like, well, let's head up the hill here and we'll do some calls. Right. And he's been drinking. So we hike up there and he's like, and we start getting in the, like, it starts getting deeper and deeper in the snow. Right. And like, he was just on the road for like working for like since right from Christmas, like all the way to turkey season. So he's like, he's a bit overweight, right? He's packing a few extra pounds. So we go up there to do some scouting the night before. We get up to the top and like, I'm like, hey, you just sit here. I'll walk up to the ridge there and then I'll throw a couple calls out right at dark. So I do that. We didn't get anything back. I come down and he's ruffling around. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? And he's like, I'm looking for my fucking contact. So now we're sitting there, right? We're looking for his contact. We got our headlamps going on. Finally, we found his contact. So we're good, right? And we're walking back down the hill and it's kind of slippery, right? And, you know, I'm walking on the side where it's not so slippery. And he's walking right where it's really slippery and he's buzzed up, right? So we're walking downhill and I'm cutting back and forth. I'm trying to like stay where there's no snow. And I'm just trying to, you know, work my way downhill. And then all of a sudden I hear this wham. I turn around. He's like, he's like laid out like a board, right? Gets up. He just starts swearing, right? He's swearing and kicking and just freaking out. So he did that for like the whole 45 minute walk back to camp. He's just pissed.
Right. Oh, are you laughing?
I'm pissing myself laughing. Right. It's not helping any, right? He's swearing at me. So we get back to camp, right? And then we start make some dinner. And then we go back into the wall tent and crash for the night. And like, stove is a bitch the whole night. Like the wall tent has one of those wood stoves, but like they're never the best, right? And so like he's unhappy because he hurt his side when he fell. So he's like trying to lay on one side. And then like, it was really hot at the beginning. And this is the first time he slept in the wall tent. So then it's really hot at the beginning, but then the fire goes out. Right. Then like, he's sitting there and he's trying to get warm and he can't roll on the side. And he's just freaking swearing. And he's trying to get the fire going. And then he's like, he opens it up. And then like the whole tent is full of smoke, right? So it opens up the front door. We get all the smoke out. I get the fire going and I lays down and I'm like, Jesus, you're a mess, bud. Just go to bed. So we get up and he's like, he can't walk now. He's hopping around. And I'm like, oh, you all right? He's like, yeah, go fuck yourself. I'm fine, right? So he's hopping around. Like, we didn't find anything. We went back up to an area. Well, we didn't go up to that area, but we're around the same area where our wall tent was set up, like not within vicinity.
Yeah.
And like, we hunted there hard a day and a half, 2 days. And I was like, okay, dude, we got to go somewhere else. So we're like, okay, well, so we went and tried this other area for a day, nothing. Went to another area at night and we got a gobble. So I was like, okay, well, this is the plan. Let's come back here in the morning. Right. And we're a drive away. So we actually had a drive to that area. So we drove back, got back to our tent. I lit the wall stove and he's sitting there, he's hobbling around and I'm like, dude, okay, let me see your ass. Let's see how bad it is. Like, let me see it. He's like, fuck off. I'm like, dude, just let me see it. Let's see how bad this thing is. You're acting like a little baby. Pulls down his pants, like shows me his ass cheek, dude. And it is purple.
Purple,
the biggest bruise I've ever seen in my life, and it's like deep dark purple. I'm like, oh shit, dude. Pretty funny. So anyway, so same thing that night, eh? He's cold again, and like, I'm like, what kind of sleeping bag did you bring? I'm looking at his sleeping bag. I'm like, well, it's supposed to have a liner, but I forgot my liner, blah blah blah. No. Yeah, so he was cold. So anyway, we went through the same crap at night. So in the morning, we go back to that spot where we heard the gobbles. I'm like, okay, well, here. He's been having such a shitty time. I was like, okay, well, you can shoot the bird, man. Like, so we set the decoys up. And then I'm like, okay, well, let's just wait and we'll see if we hear any gobbles. He's like, should we call him? I'm like, no, let's just wait and we'll see. And then like, sure enough, dude, it was like, they were close to where we had set up, like close. We heard gobbles and I was like, okay. So I do a couple little plucks on the on the call, and they're coming in hard. Like, we can hear him. I didn't call. And he's like, call. I'm like, no, shut up. Just get ready. Sure enough, they come like right up top of the ridge. They're looking right at the decoy. He said, I couldn't see him. He said, yeah, they're looking right at the decoy. Goes to pull his gun up. Click.
He didn't own it. No. Didn't go
off. So he's sitting there and he's fucking with his gun trying to get it. And finally gets it. And the birds flew off, right? And he's like, he gets up and he's just swearing and cursing. He takes the gun and he shoots it in the air. And he's like, I'm going home. Fuck this.
Oh, no. That's hilarious.
It was pretty funny. And then last year, he didn't even come out.
Just wasn't into it? Or
well, it was. Yeah, it was like we. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. He wanted to go, but he had like conflicting work schedules. And then it was like, well, I was going and I wasn't having any luck, right? I was getting pissed off because I just wasn't having any luck. And he's like, well, I'm not going to go out there if it's dead. But anyway, it's pretty funny. But this year he said he's back on board. So
have you guys ever looked for the roosting trees? How you know it's a roosting tree, like their main one or main couple?
No.
I'd read about it and I didn't really get it, but you know, being out in a couple areas where there's quite a bit of activity and did some walking around, and dude, it was like somebody went around with a white paint marker and just drew a big giant circle around the tree from all the shit.
Really?
Yeah. And from, I was just like, what the heck is that? And I was like, oh my goodness, this is a roosting tree. And it's not that they're in that one all the time.
Yeah.
But in a couple of these areas, they obviously had a few favorites in their areas, close to water, close to some fields, and close to heavy cover all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I must have found 3 or 4 of them in this one spot.
No kidding.
And I was just, I'm always looking for them now. Even spring, summer, fall, it doesn't really matter to me. It's like anything else, things pattern. And if they're sitting in there now, there's a reason for it. So they might not be far away even the next year.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, it's actually pretty gross to find once you do find one. And just how much crap is there, because they just love their spot. Like it's.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. Just keep that in mind too, if you're heading out to an area where.
Yeah. I've come across some eggs. I found eggs, turkey eggs. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I sat there and watched forever and then a hen came down. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. So do they leave their eggs on the ground then? And then.
Yeah, man, they're just like on like this little old, like it was like really old rotten stump. It was they're just kind of like right there on the ground. I was like, no wonder they always get like, cause I know like skunks and raccoons, they hammer on those things, eh?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that. That's, I always wondered. If they did,
but... Yeah, I was just cruising around and all of a sudden I come across this thing of eggs. I was like, huh. Yeah, I got a picture of it on my phone somewhere. I'll send it to you.
Yeah,
pretty neat.
That is neat. So are you going to, when are you going to start? I know you like to hunt your spring bear. When do you usually start in your area? Do you start right away or do you leave it a few weeks?
Yeah, man. I really, to be honest, I don't really start getting serious about bears till like mid-May.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're pretty hard to spot right at the beginning. They're still cruising in and out of their den, I find. And I don't know. I like to chase turkeys and stuff. And now we got the kid, so we're going to be trying to get him a bird. And
Yeah,
I want to try to get Wyatt a bird before we get Causey one, just so I can rub it in his face.
Oh, man. I mean, like, he got up, he stoked the fire, no problem. Slept the rest of the night, went out and shot his bird in 5 minutes.
and the funny thing is, too, is like when we were packing up and leaving, that dummy, he found his freaking, he found the liner for his sleeping bag.
So he brought it.
He brought it. It was in the bottom of his bag.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. It was funny. I still give him a hard time about that. He's pretty sensitive to it, though. But.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're good definitely going to send some pictures if you guys end up getting a bird.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Kid. I want to see your kid's picture of a bird.
Yeah, I'm not even going to hunt. Turkey hunt falls like 15th is on Good Friday, so it's like perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to be up there for those 4 days. So my goal is just to try to get Wyatt one.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a blast. So
yeah, I'm contemplating going down south. I'm not 100%. It depends on the snow and stuff too, because I try to maybe a little, maybe closer to the end in right. May of the season in May. Cause what it ends on the 15th of May, right?
Yeah. 15th to 15th.
So depending on the snow and the weather, maybe haul the trailer down just for a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my wife and they can all do their thing at the, one of the lakes, and I'll just cruise, see if I can hear anything or see anything and get something great. If not, whatever, but yeah, definitely need some more areas to go to.
Yeah. It's good to have variety. That's one thing I'm always looking for is grounds, but I'm doing that for like anything and everything, always just looking.
Yeah. I think the hardest thing I've had to learn in the last couple of years is sometimes you got, I'll just bring up elk. Sometimes you got to leave elk to find elk. It sounds silly, but you know, you're sitting on a herd and there's a 5-point in there and it's 6-point season. Well, there's no point in sitting on that herd every single day. You know, it's good to come visit it again because things can change, but
yeah,
you know, sometimes you just be like, yeah, I can get in on them, but it's like, it's not doing you any good because you can't shoot anything in there anyway. So you got to look, you know, hard, but you got to be like, okay, I'm going to go plan B, C, D, E.
Yeah.
Just to like combine and then start over again if you can't find anything.
Yeah. You definitely, it's definitely good to have variety for sure. Like I've had areas where I've seen there's been a bull in there. And he was a 5-point for 3 years, like just a 5x5. I seen him first year. I seen him. He was a 5x5. He was a 5x5 for the 3 years. 3 years that year, the next year, and the year after, he was a 5x5. And then he was finally a 6 and like a 6x5.
Yeah.
Like, assuming that's the same bull. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but I'm pretty sure it was. I can't tell you 100% it was the same one, but pretty sure it was. So
yeah,
but he was like big five and like a big 6x5, like huge.
Yeah, I'd love to get some of those 5-point. I wish we had a longer archery season. I can't tell you how many times in the last, you know, what have we got, September 1st to the 9th for archery here.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hit or miss in the first couple of days because, you know, they're not really spooked by too many hunters.
Yeah.
But I don't usually get too much, I guess, aggressive action, if you want to call it that, until like the 7th, 8th, 9th. Usually it's like clockwork. Every year I get a bull raged up. Last year on the September 9th, just absolute screaming match with one. I was like, this thing's dead. Like I've got him. He's mine. And we went back and forth, and I bet you it was a good half an hour moving around and working the area. And I found this guy on just a small piece of private land that I was on, but it was all crowned behind it. But there was one other property, not very big. It was only like 100 yards long, and everything behind it was crowned. And I was just like, just don't cross that line, whatever, because I didn't have permission. It was new owners. Mm-hmm. I didn't have permission to hunt that 100 yards till I crossed over. I'm going to see if I can get that this upcoming season. But he was just, yeah. He had a cow in heat, and she kept wanting to come to me, and he kept getting in between and pushing her. And
yeah.
Oh yeah. It was just, yeah. I just needed to find him 100 yards closer from when I first kind of got into it with him, and I probably would have popped him last year, but that's when it's those last couple of days of the archery season. And it's just like, man, can't this just be another 2 weeks longer? Even like it longer than that, but.
Yeah, it'd be nice if it was all September, just archery only.
Yeah. Well, I think are we the only province in Canada that hunts the elk in the rut with a rifle?
I think we're the only province. And yeah, like what do they got in Alberta?
I think they're all archery.
Yeah.
Until they I know they have some late season LEHs for sure.
Yeah.
I know a few buddies that have put in for that.
Yeah.
And those are in, like to say November, beginning of November, maybe late October.
Yeah.
But I guess in theory, it allows all the prime bulls to do their thing and let nature take its place. You know, the biggest and strongest winds and breeds for the most part. We're here. Anything drops into our valley, it's dead.
Yeah.
There's not many of them. So you end up hearing whispers and then everybody heads to those areas and thing doesn't have a chance. But
no.
Yeah,
it'd be nice if it was archery only for all September. I mean, unfortunately, it's probably not going to be long till there's all LEH for the whole province. Oh, but
yeah, it's scary. It's scary stuff. I was doing some more of that. I mean, we've talked about that, all that Peace Region 7B bullshit that's going on.
Yeah.
And this afternoon, I was just doing some more background reading just on the actual court ruling and all that kind of stuff, you know, just so I'm not listening to other people talk about or read it firsthand. And yeah, it's just, it's nuts that they're going the way that they are. And
And the worst part is, like, you know, they put it out to public opinion, harmonizing Region 6, Region 7A, and Region 7B in regards to moose and caribou.
Yeah.
I don't, like, they put that out. It closed on January 23rd. I don't think too many people replied to it. I didn't even know about it. I mean, it's not like you check those things all the time, right? So, yeah. I mean, that's no excuse, but it's probably safe to assume that that went through, because it's probably safe to assume that not too many guys or girls had anything to say about it, right? So it's probably safe to assume that anything that happens in 6, 7A, or 7B regarding moose or caribou is going to happen to all three. So now if they shut down caribou region 7B, 7A, 6, no caribou hunting, 7, you know, moose to LEH only, we're talking pretty much everything north of Quesnel being LEH only for moose.
That's nuts. That's just going to push everybody down to our areas.
Yeah.
But in our area, everything's LEH down here for moose anyway. We don't have any caribou hunting down here.
No, but when you think of the other species, like this is one thing, right? Like down here, you know, when you're looking at, when you're going through the regs, you go through region 8. Region 4 is very similar to region 8. I mean, there's a couple nuances, but region 3, a little bit different, right? You just, not as many critters in region 3 as you can hunt in region 8 and 4. So you start looking through the regs and you're like, oh, well, look at this. We can go this time of the year and elk's open, whitetail's open, mule deer's open, black bear's open, and they have a whitetail doe season. That's open. You know, we got 2 weeks here. We can hunt turkeys. Shit, it's looking pretty good.
Yeah. No, I hear you. If I was just looking at the paperwork too, I'd be thinking the exact same thing if I lived somewhere else.
Yeah.
Hunt everything at once. And
then, you know what I mean? Like, what's the first thing that usually gets killed on, you know, you got a couple guys coming down from up north. They're not the best elk hunters, or they've never hunted elk and they've never hunted the area. They don't know the area. Most of them are going to, you know, you cover enough ground, eventually you're going to pop into a white-tailed doe, right?
Absolutely.
And yeah, they're not coming down here for nothing.
No. And I know a couple, the last set of regulations, not this new one that they just put out, or 2 years ago, but the one before that, they had the overlap of the end of the elk season too. So it's like, you're out elk hunting, like you say, you don't get anything. And it's like, wow, there's whitetail riding around everywhere. We're going home with at least, you know, a whitetail. And you go through these camps that have 4, 6, 8 people in them. There's 4, 6, 8 whitetail does sitting on their rack. It's all legal.
Yeah.
They've done it, but you can't, and that's like one camp.
Yeah.
And you can't sustain that. And down here, like, you know, the animals that we had, I mean, we were the Serengeti. It was awesome. And that was even before, that was before I started hunting. And just watching them, how quickly they've gone down in the last couple of years. And not just, I mean, the hunting part did its pick too, but then, you know, the predator increase. And, you know, the government not wanting to deal with that when it comes to grizzly bears and not wanting to touch the wolves, even though they're a huge, huge problem. So many black bears, like, you know, even black bears might not do a huge amount of damage, you know, later on, but they, you know, in the fall time and stuff to the deer so much, but they sure do their number in the springtime on all the fawns and stuff and the cows. Like,
oh yeah. That's one thing people don't see with black bears. It's like, they freaking hammer those fawns.
They are good at what they do.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of black bears. Like, people, they throw black bear numbers out there and you're like, oh shit, there's way more black bears than you guys are saying there are. I mean, like, I get it. How the hell do you count black bears? It's impossible. Yeah. But like, yeah, like, there's tons of black bears. I mean, in areas where you have a higher density of grizzly bears, obviously you're going to have less black bears. But
yeah,
I mean, for the most part, I mean, it's a bear's, you got one bear or the other bear, right? So, I mean,
yeah. I know lots of guys that'll drive out to an area in the springtime and same kind of thing as what you're saying, like end of May into June, and then you drive up to an area and you're going to see 15, 20 black bears in a day. And they might not take one because it might, you know, to them, it's not mature, you know, it's smaller or anything like that. Not that they're looking for a trophy, but if they're, you know, we've had bear bratwursts and stuff like that. It's delicious.
Oh yeah.
But you know, they're just like, no, it's not mature. There's not enough meat. It's not worth taking. But they'll see 15, 20 of them in a single day. And it's dumbfounding when you think about it. Like,
oh yeah,
that's just one set of hunters.
And yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon to go see 10 to 15 bears a day when you're, I mean, even when you're not bear hunting, but even when you're bear hunting. I remember talking to Josh Kirshner from, Dialed In Hunter. I don't know if you're familiar with him. Him and I were talking, like, he hunts down in Arizona, and he's like, well, how many bears do you see a day? And I was telling him, I was like, oh, dude, you don't even want to know. Like, on any day, like, I could see 15 bears. And he's like, I don't see 15 bears in, like, 2 years. He's telling me he's like goes on like 3 to 5 day bear hunts and like lucky to see a bear.
Was that the same person who said they have about 3,000?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, he's been on the show a while. He was a while back. We should get him back on for spring bear. We'll just chat with him about it. Yeah, he's a good shit.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, cool. So you're out trying some new bows, eh?
Oh, dude. I'm the kid at Christmas time right now. Had some issues with my older bow last year. I was really happy with my I think it's a 2012 Bowtech Destroyer 340. It was awesome. I loved it. Smooth, fast, old school. As far as compounds are, they really jumped ahead in technology.
Oh yeah. Every year, and it just seems to compound. Like every year it gets a little better, a little better, a little better. Like the leaps get further and further apart from like how advanced technology comes.
And I think that's what made me the most excited about looking at bows and actually shooting them. I went in with a totally open mind. You know, I did my research. I saw what was there. And I'm not looking for the fastest bow. I'm not looking for the slowest. I'm trying to find that nice happy medium with something nice and smooth, not getting any younger. I typically pull about 70 pounds. So it seems like you could fit right in the middle of all these bows for everything is either set up 60 to 70, or you have that range 70 to 80, and you can pretty much get whatever you want for your personality, whatever, you know, it seems like a lot of these companies designed a few different styles of bow for the guy who wants to pull 80 pounds and the guy who just wants, you know, that smooth cycle and that's it. And I went into, you know, I was going to try Bowtech and PSE and Matthews, of course, and APA. And I went in, and where's the first place I went? I went to Calgary, pretty much the two main archery shops. I'm sure there's a few more, but the two main ones are Calgary Archery Center down in the south and Jimbo's Archery up in the north of Calgary. Both were awesome places. I think I tried out a couple Bowtechs, an APA and a PSE at the Canadian Archery Center. They were amazing. Set them up all exactly to my draw length and just poundage that I wanted. And it was mind blowing to say the least at the difference from my old bow to these new ones. Mind blown. Like I just sat there.
Yeah. So you brought your old bow with you.
Pardon me?
You brought your old bow with you?
No, I took the sight off it.
Oh yeah.
I knew I was going to get something. Maybe I have to order it depending on, you know, cause the whole stock, you know, everybody's having problems bringing stuff in.
Yeah, man.
And I brought my sight just in case I found a bow that, you know, lucky enough, maybe it'll be in stock and, you know, we can get it set up there while I'm there. But, you're a Matthews guy, aren't you?
This year? Yeah. For the longest time I shot Hoyt.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I was just like that RX5 I had last year. I was just so turned off from it that I just, I went and tried that. And I'm talking to Brian Barney about that new Matthews bow. I sat around for weeks and weeks and I was like, I got to go down and try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I went down to Hardcore Archer here and down seeing Ken. Oh.
Yeah.
It's nice. Yeah. I like it, but you know, it's hard. Every bow, they got a couple, you know, like it's aluminum bow, right?
So yeah.
It's a little different than the carbon. You know, the carbon's nice. But like that, the way like they have that bridge lock system and how tight everything is on that bow, it's just like, it's insane. It's awesome.
Yeah, so. They're really thinking about making it a balanced.
Yeah.
Everything just streamlined and balanced instead of having everything hang off the sides. And it is crazy how much, you know, torque you'll get from having, you know, a couple extra ounces on one side of the boat versus the other, and that, and you start putting everything in the middle. And
yeah,
it's neat how balanced it'll sit in your hand just as is.
Oh yeah. That's the first thing I know. And that's the thing, right? You start putting, you know, you have your sight on one side of the bow, then you have your quiver. I mean, not everybody shoots with a quiver on their bow, but I do. Then you have your arrows in there, right? And then all of a sudden you're listing to one side. Yeah. So then you try to compensate it by adding to the other side, right? To get that balance point, but you're just adding weight.
Yeah.
And not only that, I mean, that's just, you know, you have to put a stabilizer out on, say you're a right-handed shot out in your left side. That's just when you're out in the bush. I mean, it's just one more thing to get hooked up on or caught up on or snag a bush. And, you know, if you got an elk moving in or a deer moving in, and it gets caught a little bit when you're trying to move it, I can make or break it right there. Right. So
absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah. Having everything in line on that bow is just like, it's so tight. Like even their quiver is like, it's tight, man. It's like, you can't get your finger through that in a riser. It's just tight. It's awesome.
I was actually watching one of the bow shops put a couple of those quivers, the Matthews quiver, on the Matthews V3X.
Yeah.
They were like, they know what they're doing, but because of how tight it was, they were having a little bit of issues putting it on. Like they got it on beautifully for whoever the lucky customer was there, but it was crazy. I just looked at it. Yeah, there's like virtually no gap there. It's so
tight. Like you can't get your finger through there. That's how tight it is. Like it's tight, like it's pencil tight. Like a pencil would probably touch each side on the way through. Like it's tight.
Unreal. So yeah. did you just go down to try that one, like the Matthews, or did you go down and try a couple of them?
Well, that time I went down, like I went down before, and I was shooting the new PSC carbon.
That thing's
freaking light, man. Yeah. That thing is insane how light that bow is. It's crazy how light.
What did you think of like the draw cycles and that kind of stuff between the two?
I liked, man, it was good too.
Yeah.
No, there's like, you know what I mean? Like they're all, like I haven't shot the RX-7 yet, and I haven't shot anything else other than the Matthews and the PSC for this year. But
yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, well, like I had an extra bow too. I bought, I had a Prime 2 years ago. Yeah. 2 years ago. And that was nice. Right. Like the back wall was really nice.
Yeah.
But it's just, I didn't like the bow. So I went, you know, I stuck with the Hoyt, and yeah, it's, but they're also good, you know what I mean? Like they have, each one has good things, and then some have, it, you know, it has not as good things as the other bow, and it kind of like vice versa. So it's that tough to choose nowadays.
My only advice I would say, just the way you're talking about is the exact thing that, you know, I keep hearing from other people. You know, like everybody's gonna have something different, whether you're built a little differently, whether you're a little stronger in the shoulders than the next person over. Because every single bow I tested, I could have walked out of that shop happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And you would have been happy too. That's what, you know, when we were talking on the phone back and forth about it, like, you know, that's the biggest thing is, it's not what is the best bow, it's what's the best bow for you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, everybody's different. Like you said, everybody's different. So, I mean, you know, there's, some you can get short guys with like 29, 30 inch draw lengths, right? And then it's like, well, you can't have, you know, if you got a 30 inch draw length, and you know, you're not going to grab a 29 inch axle bow, right? So, So, you know, everybody's different, right? So it's, then you can get some tall guys with some short draw lengths, right?
But yeah, I know, so. Absolutely. Absolutely. I got to say, like, I went in, I was having shot a bow tech, you know, it was my only serious bow that I've shot in archery.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I got my two top ones statistically anyway, that, and I've heard raves about, and that was the new SR350. And I know a few people who have them, shot them, and said it was like the smoothest bow out there going, period. And also the CP28, which I think is their smallest axle to axle. It's more of a speed bow.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, I'll try it anyway, because we've talked before, like we hunt a lot of really tight terrain, tight. So I was like, well, I'm kind of interested in that shorter axle to axle for that purpose. So you're not getting snagged up and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I drew back on the, I started with the 350 first, and I drew back on that, and I just sat there just holding the arrow. And I was looking at the one person who was helping me out. And I was like, that was the most amazing thing I've ever felt. Like, it was so ridiculously smooth, and at 70 pounds, and it didn't feel like 70 pounds. There's no way it was even close to feeling like that. And I actually had to ask him after I shot, and I was like, are you sure this is set at six, you know, at 70 pounds? Double checked it. And yeah. So yeah, that's, I don't know, the back wall, everything was solid, smooth. And then I was like, all right, well, let's try this, you know, the CP20. I'm expecting, you know, a bit of a hump in there. And because that's supposed to be their speed bow.
Yeah.
That thing was sick.
I know. That's what I know, man. Like, yeah, it's funny.
Oh, it drew back almost as nice as the 350. I'm sure there was some minor differences, but I was like expecting this big hump. And by the time, you know, I drew back, and I was like, there was nothing that I could tell anyway for me. And man, it was just, I don't know. The only cons that I found, like if you ever do test one of those out just for fun or whatever, the only thing I didn't like about those is if you have to let down, it was literally like having to push it forward. I don't know if you've heard other guys talk about that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But it was like, you're letting off tension, and it's not taking it. And then all of a sudden it goes.
Yeah.
There was one thing I didn't like. I'd rather just go back with even weight as you're letting down.
Yeah.
You know, in case you're in that position where you're out after that.
Yeah. That's what I found with the Prime too.
Oh, okay. Like
yeah. It wasn't, and all of a sudden it was just like, wanted to jump out of your hand. Yeah.
Yeah. And those are the only two bows I found like that, to be honest. I tried the PSC Evo, I think it's EVL.
Yeah. Yeah.
And 34, I believe, is a big bow.
Yeah.
It was nice. It was a little harder to pull back, but it was very smooth. It didn't really feel like a hump. It just had a slightly different feel to it. Mm-hmm. And letting go, like, yeah, a tiny bit of hand shock, not much. Like, yeah. I could shoot that thing all day long and it wouldn't bother me. But it had that feel of pulling through the whole way, like after I let down. And I was like, okay, that's more like it. Like, I like to feel it as I'm, you know.
Yeah, more consistent.
Yeah, I'd just be afraid if you got that nice white tail or that deer, elk, whatever, and you have to let down because disappeared behind a tree and you need a break, you're not going to get a shot for another 10 steps. That you're not making this huge movement.
Yeah.
Because it's pulling you forward all of a sudden when it does decide to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't, those are the only things there. I don't,
APA. What about that? Did you try that APA?
I tried out the APA. The only unfortunate thing for that there is I forgot to write down whether I tried the Mamba or the Cobra.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I was trying to write notes and all that so I could keep them all straight. It was a beautiful bow, probably the most aggressive one. It definitely had a little hump in there.
Oh yeah.
Nothing that was bad though, but there was a hump in there when he got in there. Shot smooth. I didn't feel much for hand shock in that bow.
Yeah, and pretty dead in the hand.
Yeah, pretty dead in the hand. And it felt fast compared to the other. Like it just, so yeah, I wish it was my only bad there is I forgot to write that one down. And I think that one there was, that one wasn't a 70 pound. That one there was set at 65.
Right.
So it would have been interesting to see what it would have been like at 70. I'm not sure if that one has different mods that you put on.
I don't know. I'm not familiar. I've never shot a AP or nothing. Like I know they're Canadian bows, and but
I've got a couple buddies who shoot them and they love them.
Oh really? Yeah. I don't know anyone who shoots one. Like I've seen them in the pro shop down here at Hardcore Archery and stuff, but I've never and I talked to Ken about it and stuff and Chuck down there, and they're like, yeah, I mean, they're good bows, or I mean, they're a Canadian bow, but they got kind of some funny things going on. But
yeah, well, if you end up managing to make it down for our 3D shoot.
We're in for that for sure.
Well, that's awesome. That'd be wicked. You're going to meet a couple of guys for sure that have them there. A couple of my good buddies they run them and they love them.
Yeah.
So
nice. Cool. I know there used to be, apparently there used to be a rep that lived around here. I don't know if it's Kamloops, Kelowna, or like somewhere in the interior here, southern interior, but
okay.
If he's still kicking around or not, but
yeah, I know my buddy, Cody Statham. He actually was there at the very beginning. I think he actually helped them design their logo and everything.
Oh yeah. Cool.
I know he still shoots. I know he's busy now, so I'm not sure how much he's in with them right now, but I know he's still tied to them to a small point.
At least, right on.
Very minimum. But
what do you think? What do you think of how those APAs look? How did it look?
I liked it. They've you actually got it? A, yeah, I kind of like the look of it. And I kind of like how they have a few little tools with them as well. Just stuff that's like cut into the riser itself. Like even like they've got a broadhead cutout in there for multiple different styles. You can actually stick your broadhead in there if you think you hear it loosen off or whatever. And you can stick it in front of the shaft, so you're not having to use your fingers or anything. And then there is, I think they have something cut out for, there's another tool. I'm pretty sure it was one to go in the cam. I'm not sure if they still had that. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it because as soon as I shot it, I was like, no, this isn't as nice as the SR350 and the CP28. So I only shot that one round and then I put it to the side, but I'm pretty sure they have like a tool that's integrated with the riser so that if you have an emergency fix out in the field, you can put it in the cam
and
will release kind of deal. So you can do some quick repairs if you're
capable. Matthews came up with that too, though. They got a field kit so you can.
That's right. A couple extra. Is it in the cams? They have some extra little hooks that you put that string on to.
You put the string on. Yeah. And it, I've never messed around with it or not. Nothing, but I'll probably screw something up if I try it, but it's just cool to have. Throw that in your pack.
Well, especially if you're out on a 5 or 10 day hunt or something like that. And it's just like, you've got some spare things or something goes wrong. You can actually work on it and it's not like you're wrecked.
Yeah, for sure. And I always like when I'm archery hunting, I always have extra shit in my pack.
Yeah, that's
always,
smart.
Yeah, like always have everything, extra D loops with pliers, right? Serving string, an extra ice, like an extra peep sight.
Yeah.
Some glue. I have everything in there just in case.
That's my next thing I have to learn is the serving and stuff like that. I don't know how to do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's relatively easy.
Yeah, I watched them doing a bunch of stuff in the shop there when I was waiting to try out the bows in the second place there. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can kind of, I missed a couple little steps, but I was like, I totally could see what they were doing. And I was like, oh, that's totally doable. Just need to have somebody show you what to do, where to do it. But that's the next step is to learn that. I like to be able to, our closest bow shop here is 2 hours away. He's amazing. Oh,
no kidding. Yeah. See, but we have, I'm 15 minutes away from one, and but I still do everything at home. I fletch all my own arrows and I do everything, but kind of just when I got into it, I kind of just started wanting to learn everything about it. So I kind of just dove into that and there's no better way to learn something than learning how it all goes together. And then it's just super handy to have because, if stuff's not going right or that, you can switch it up and you kind of get an idea of like what exactly is going on, especially with the arrows when you start building arrows for yourself. And you kind of get a really good idea of what's going into that arrow.
Yeah, that I've learned in the last year and a half, just that I do all my own now too. And it's from listening to other, it's really not hard.
No.
When you start learning the steps and you start listening to other people and their, some theories as to why you do certain things. And again, it's all personal preference. So you can trial and error until you find your sweet spot for yourself.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's not, everyone's going to be different, right? Everyone's shooting a little bit of different draw length. Everyone's shooting a little bit, they're shooting different poundage, you're shooting at different things. So, everyone's different. So it's going to be like that with your arrow. So it goes back to what's going to work for one person. Like my arrows aren't going to work for you and vice versa, even though we have the same draw length.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that was talking to Jimbo's Archery was the last place I went to in Calgary there. And he was awesome with just listening to, cause I told him I'd already shot a bunch of bows earlier in the day. And I was shooting the Matthews V3X there and really liked it. didn't quite think it was quite as smooth as the 350 SR 350, but man, it felt good. It was like, again, amazing bow. Yeah. And I started telling him about, you know, kind of the two Bowtechs and the CP 28 there. I was just like, man, that thing was just, it's a shocker for how small it was and how smooth it was. And he's like, hold on a second. He's like, I got a bow I want you to try. And I was like, first of all, I'm going to tell you one thing. If it's over 2K for the bigger
another rack,
leave it hanging, because I'm not buying it. I was just, I didn't end up trying the Levitate from PSC for the same reason, because it, you know, it's like 21 or 2200 bucks. And I was like, I just can't do it.
Yeah. And the same with the RX7 too. I don't know.
That's right.
What's that one going for now?
It was around the same thing. I'm sure it was 21 or 2200 bucks.
Yeah, they're all like, even the RX5, I think that was going around that last year too. So that's kind of like, but then I think, you know, the RX7, is it really that much better? Like, I haven't shot one yet, but they got one down at Hardcore. I should pop down there and start shooting it before I start talking. So at least then I can know what the hell I'm talking about.
It'd be interesting to compare it to like the one, the bow that Jim actually ended up bringing out to me. And he's like, he brought out the Ventum Pro 33.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, he's like, it's just like literally like 50 bucks more than the Matthews. And I was like, right on, bring it out. I'll try it. Why not? I'm here. Right.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is kind of, it's very similar to the CP28, the way it draws. It's not that speed bow, but it's smooth. And I drew that thing back. I shot and I was just like, holy shit. And I turned around and my wife just looked at me and she's like, that's the one you're getting, right? And afterwards I was like, how'd you know? And she's just like, that's the biggest shit eating grin I've seen on your face all day long. It was just like instant. It was like, yeah, this is the bow. And it was just how ridiculously smooth it was. I don't care if it's 10 feet a second slower than the others. I'll be able to shoot that thing till I'm 90. Like, yeah, that's how smooth it was. And it was, again, 70 pounds like all the others.
Yeah.
And the thing felt like 50 pounds. Like, you just hold it forever.
Yeah, that's one nice thing about the Matthews. Like, I've shot 70, 80. And, you know, that with the cam systems they have, it's just like, yeah, they're it's amazing. And it's funny because, like, my cousin has a 70 pound. He had the very first Redworks bow with Hoyt.
Okay.
Fuck, man. Like, you have to fight to draw that thing back. I don't even think he can draw it back anymore. But it's an old bitch, that thing. It is just mean. But I mean, it's got tiny little cams on it, right? So
it's crazy the size of the cams they have now in comparison to like what you're saying. It's nuts.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's one of the first things I noticed when I started going to the Redworks, was just the size. Like, I was shooting a Hoyt before.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the heck it was, man. I'd have to go look at the bows, but it wasn't one of the Redworks bows that Hoyt had. And then I went and shot, started shooting the Redworks, and I was like, oh man, this is way better. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. Well, whenever you come out here, you'll have to, hopefully I'll have my bow there tuned up for the most part and give her a whirl and see what you think about it. And
yeah.
So I was out in the backyard this morning. I was trying to do some tuning. There's some shaft tuning with it. And I got it close. And then that slight breeze came up and was just moving the paper a tiny bit. And I was like, oh, I'm done now. Like, definitely can't read a paper tear when the paper could be fluttering as it hits. And
yeah, it's not ideal to paper tune your bow in the wind for sure.
So as much as I wanted to keep shooting, I had to put it away and cry a little, but
yeah. How's the shoulder?
It feels 100% now. I wrecked that.
So what did you do to it?
I don't really want to say, because
that's why I'm asking, so you'll get it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I woke up from a really nice sleep one morning. My shoulder hurt like a son of a bitch. And yeah, I chalk it up to, I slept on it and I heard it. I have no idea. There wasn't a single moment where it was like, oh, I hurt my shoulder. It was literally, I went to bed one night 100% and I woke up and apparently I had a couple small tears in it. And I was like 2 weeks before archery season started. So yeah, mid-August. And I just went through it and I didn't care.
Like, what do you do now? Do you sleep on your back? Like, you just tuck pillows in there?
Actually, after going to physio and stuff and telling, like, I described to them how I slept and stuff. And I'm kind of like, I lay on my arm. Like,
I'm a side sleeper too, but I mean, I've never woken up and been like, oh, I can't shoot my body anymore. I slept on my shoulder.
Man alive. Yeah. Yes. I can't sleep on my back. So the physio people are just like, as she's sleeping on your arm with your arm above your head is actually one of the worst ways to sleep, because you've got a few you got tendons and stuff that run a certain way in your shoulder. And when you sleep like that, you're actually pinching them.
Oh yeah.
So I'm sure I had some micro tears from whatever. I don't know. Could be anything.
Oh yeah.
I'm not sure you did. It's all not nice to my body. I go and do whatever I want.
And no, I'm playing hockey and shit, right? Like, how many times have your shoulder hit the boards or another shoulder or the ice, right? So
I think it's just a few minor cumulative things. And then finally something just went, and unfortunately I don't have a good story to say this is how I injured it, and it was really cool and it was worth it. I know, I just woke up older. I hurt more. But I
love it.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I went through the whole season and I was dead set on getting my animal with a bow, and elk season didn't turn out. I switched to the rifle because I wanted to, was on a couple animals, but I couldn't quite close the deal. And then by the time, well, when was it? I think November came along there. It was hurting so bad that I was just like, I'm going to have to take my animal with the rifle. Like, there's just, and it sucks because I took both my deer, my mule deer I took in September while I was elk hunting at 10 yards, which was a bit of a gripe. Yeah, it was like 24 degrees out, so I couldn't carry my both weapons anymore.
Yeah.
So I left it back at the truck a couple kilometers back. And then my whitetail, I got a week before the end of rifle season. I got it at, it was like 15 yards or something like that, or vice versa. But yeah, total for both deer, 25 yards. And it's just like, are you kidding me? Like, this was the year to get them both with my bow, and I didn't.
Yeah, man. Like, the thing about committing to bow full time is you gotta just leave the gun at home.
Yeah.
That's what I found. Like, we've talked about it before, and it's like, you know, I did the same thing for a lot of years, and then this last year I was like, nope, I'm not even gonna pull it out. I didn't even, not even, you know, I just left it in the closet. Fuck it.
I think that's what's gonna have to happen. I'm not sure on elk. For deer, I can definitely do that. For elk, it might depend on where I'm going. If I'm going to areas where I know there's lots of long shots, I mean, the 6 points are just getting harder to find.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem finding elk. I have a problem finding 6 point elk.
Yeah. 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 And it all depends on LEH draws too. Obviously, if you get, we'll see what's coming out here next month for LEH draws. But I mean, if you get once in a lifetime draw, it's hard to.
Well, that's kind of what the moose one is down in our region here.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that's what I'm getting. Like, I had that sheep draw last year and I used my bow. But
yeah. I mean, and I would do the same thing. I would use my, I wouldn't even hunt elk. I'd be 100% moose all in.
Yeah.
My bow throughout the rut all through September here.
Yeah.
Funny, because I think they actually rut a little later up in Fort St. John area where I told you I was hoping on going.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of.
I don't know what the hell's going to happen there.
It's kind of going to be.
Yeah,
luck there, eh? Most likely.
Yep.
Well, apparently it's already gone through. Like,
oh, really?
I seen a letter from Mike Morris. Did I send you that letter? Anyway, I seen a letter from Mike Morris. He's the MLA in Prince George.
Okay.
And he said he's addressed his concerns to that Katrine Conroy.
Okay.
And she just ignored him and said, no, it's already done. I've already put it through. And she's the Minister of Forestry and Land and Wildlife. She lives in Castlegar.
I definitely think there needs to be a branch just for wildlife.
Yeah. Yeah. And when Jesse was on, I was hoping I could get into that with him a little bit. And I tried to, like, I asked him that question, but like, he didn't really understand my question. And I only had him, it was kind of like, he just shuffled a bunch of things so he could get me in real quick. So I didn't, you know, I could have probably stretched it to an hour, but you know, I kind of wanted to focus on what was exactly was going on and like the immediate threat and like the immediate response, like what's the best way to go about it. Yeah. So I didn't want to get into the details too much about that, but like, yeah, like we got to get him back on. And cause I mean, like, he's pretty much the man with these issues when it comes to like knowledge of that stuff and all that. So we'll definitely have to get him back on and prod him a little bit. So we've been chatting here for an hour and a half. I don't know how long people are going to want to listen to us. Let's call it good till next time. We'll chat soon.
All right, buddy. Have a good night.
Yeah, later, dude. I want to thank everyone again for tuning in to another episode of the Focus Hunting Podcast, which is coming at you as part of the Waypoint Outdoors Collective. This episode of the Focus Hunting Podcast is brought to you by Vortex Optics, the best in optics, period. Backroads Maps. Never get lost with Backroads Maps. And AKU Boots. You owe it to your feet. Quick shout out to Howl for Wildlife. If you guys are not familiar with Howl for Wildlife, make sure you head on over to howlforwildlife.org. Become a member, doesn't cost you anything. They got tons of great stuff going on, and we're going to be working with them getting some Canadian issues put on their platform. Thanks again, everybody.